presents the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with an advertisement from the Gloucestershire Echo, read by Charlotte Green.
Baby Belling cooker on stand, good condition, £55. Ideal student accommodation.
And thanks to Jonathan Stiley for that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Matthew Norman. And facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Clive Anderson. And before we start round one, here's a cutting spotted in The Guardian.
Staff at Gatwick Airport failed to return a lost hearing aid to its owner despite broadcasting a special announcement over the public address system.
Thank you, Ted Shepherd of Cheshire, for sending that in. Andy, how might Britain be slapped down by Europe?
Can I just say, I might be a bit off form tonight because I'm a bit upset about Oasis splitting up. couldn't happen to nicer people. I think this is...
Andy?
Yeah.
Who are Oasis? So I'm in training to be a judge. Yes.
I know what this is about. This is about this whole question of... There was a case taken to the European Court about the parents' right to smack. And, of course, what's happened is that Tony Blair and John Major have weighed in there. And John Major came out with this rather cryptic quote saying that he had disciplined his children in a manner which was personal and appropriate to them. And they know what I mean. It all sounded very sincere. But then Tony Blair dived in with, he does it as well. They obviously think there's votes in this, and I confidently predict that come the conference, Tony Blair will get his kids up on stage and give them a thick ear in front of everybody. And can I just say that I don't hit my kids, 8 and 6, because they're both bigger than me?
Why are your kids called 8 and 6?
Because it's so hard remembering a name, you know, it's like... Well, we call him 7 for short, so...
I think at least you'd decimalise it.
This is the story of the boy who took his father to the European Court in an attempt to outlaw corporal punishment. The court has now drawn up a comprehensive list of guidelines which they hope will help parents. If they roll it up, it leaves less of a mark than a cane would. 2 points to you, Andy, and Matthew. Welcome to the News Quiz.
Thank you.
Which list bore all the hallmarks of a goldsmith?
This is, of course, Sir James Goldsmith's referendum party, which has just released a list of its new candidates to fight the general election, which includes, I think, one Sainsbury, and most intriguingly of all, John Aspinall, the zookeeper, the man who wrestles gorillas, which some think qualifies him pretty accurately for spelling Parliament. And he will be standing against Michael Howard in Folkestone, which is an intriguing prospect because... John Aspinall, I think, is thought to be one of the few people in the country, apart from Jack Straw, who's far to the right of Michael Howard on matters of law and order. So I think we're going to have a sort of contest between the two, possibly on the hustings, in which they compete to see if they can come up with the cruelest method of killing people for shoplifting and other major crimes. They have slight embarrassment for the referendum party because they've just employed Cecil Parkinson's firm to vet their candidates. And just found out that the man who previously was vetting their candidates is in fact a candidate for the National Front. So it hasn't been a great week, but it's getting better.
It refers to the referendum party's list of prospective candidates and the high-profile fight between millionaire zoo owner John Aspinall and Michael Howard. A straight fight between a man with a reputation for letting people into cages and one with a reputation for letting them out. Sir James Goldsmith said he has no shortage of willing candidates, though most applicants said they were reluctant to go chasing after Michael Portillo's seat. Clive, where does gold blend well in with a Swiss roll?
Don't me.
That's product placement, isn't it? You've been... You're sneaking adverts onto the BBC by cunningly... Well, does this anything to do with all the gold that the Nazis ripped off during the war?
Yes.
And surprise, surprise, it's turned up in Switzerland, which I thought we all knew that's where it was. I thought that was the whole point of Switzerland being allowed to be neutral throughout all wars, is so that everybody could stuff their money there and the Swiss could be impossibly rich and not join in and then forget where it came from in the first place and be sort of neutral and smug about it. But there's been a report out, and it's now there, and where there's no extradition treaty between Switzerland and the rest of the world and gold. But they apparently, I think they've said that you can have it back now. It is possible to have it back, as long as you can think of the correct number, the 95-digit number that goes with each bar of gold and melted piece of it, whatever. So that is that the answer? I can't...
It is.
Yeah.
Well, natural subject lends itself to human. There are these Swiss bankers, and these chaps in jack boots, which would come storming up with wheelbarrows full of gold bullion. And they had no idea. They thought it was the cost of LOLO paying their wages in.
The really puzzling thing about that story, though, was that I've seen accounts where the Allies said that at the end of the war, they suspected that the Swiss had a lot more gold than they were declaring, but that they had no legal sanctions to get it back from them. You think we had millions of soldiers... Yeah. All around Switzerland at the end of the war, you think.
So you thought that an invasion of Switzerland would have been...
I think
you should be on Bill Clinton's election campaign. You could easily get a vote or two there.
I would happily invade Switzerland because I was once moved from the steps of Zurich station because I made it look untidy.
You can see their point, Andy, can't you?
So 2 points there, and Alan, a piece of music for you. Alan, why is Labour withdrawing over the withdrawal of Labour?
Well, yes, this is, who else could it be but New Labour, new liars, new compromise. Terry Blair, I saw, is going to upset my team, but Terry Blair earns £250,000 a year. It's quite good being a barrister, isn't it? I've married somebody in Labour. It's about the £4.26 minimum wage.
I get more than that coming on this programme. You earn £50,000 a night doing this. You must be on double that thing, the captain.
It means, really, that Terry Blair probably earns something like 100 times the minimum wage that's being required by the union, well, which they in fact voted for at the conference. And Tony Blair thought this was really rather a bad idea because of the effect on the economy. Because then lots of slave labourers who work about £1 a week would have their businesses closed down because you can't employ slave labour. And this didn't chime with honest New Labour principles.
Isn't it just the unions have fixed a figure for something like £4.62.5 a week is the minimum? And Labour want one, but they won't want to say what it is. So they can surprise us. It could be, ha ha ha, you voted for a minimum wage, but it's in fact 30 pence an hour. But we're not breaking any promises. Or it could be £200,000 a year, so we'll all be on the same as...
So you mean some... New Labour, slave Labour.
The question referred to Labour's problems at the TUC conference in Blackpool. Proposals were made for a one-month waiting period before strike action could be taken. This is meant to give workers time to consider their position and the Royal Mail time to deliver the ballots. And at the end of round one, the scores are each team 4 points. Andy, what did the Archbishop say of the actress?
Well, I think it's funny how, you know, in history we get to see things much more clearly in retrospect. And it now becomes evident that at the marriage of Charles and Diana, at the moment where the Archbishop of Canterbury said, if any man knows any just cause or impediment, the whole church should have shouted, yes! including the Archbishop of Canterbury, who apparently, you know, in between doing the vows was muttering, "It'll never work, it'll never work." And because it's all come out in this biography, which Archbishop Runcie is now distancing himself from, saying that he wished he'd died before it came out. Well, I mean, you know, it's a high cathedral, Canterbury. It wouldn't have been that difficult.
He's not a very discreet person, is he, to tell your intimate problems to?
No.
You chat to him, you're the heir to the throne, you have a chat to the head of the established church, and they're rushing off and tell every journalist that they've...
Well, he got confused. He saw this tape recorder running, and he presumed it was all off the record. It's perfectly natural.
It's a good job he's not a Catholic priest, otherwise, you know, at confession, he'd be whipping back the candle. Oi, listen to this!
The former Archbishop was shocked to discover that his biography included personal comments made off the record. He believed that he could trust the person writing it because he was a journalist. He'll be telling us next he believes that after death he's going to live on a fluffy white cloud with a bearded man who can walk on water. Matthew, why might we be celebrating 2,000 years at 1,000 feet?
It is, of course, the Millennium Tower that Sir Norman Foster has designed, which I think The Guardian described as an erotic gherkin. And you wouldn't want to be stuck in a room for too long with the headline writer who came up with that one, would you? But they seem to have done it on such skillful computer generation that I actually thought for a while that I've been wandering around the city for years, I've never seen it. It actually looks incredibly realistic.
I think Prince Charles is going to have input to make it a bit more traditional, so it's going to be any 90-storey building with a thatched roof.
And a chimney, yes.
So telegraph that from Charles the top question. Of it, you could see Harwich. This is a very strange selling point. People who have never seen Harwich can now spend £500 million and climb to the top of Norman Foster.
You can also, from the top of it, see the empty floors not let in Canary Wharf. Yes. That's the other.
Sir Norman Foster's proposed erection is designed to give panoramic views of Europe's financial capital. On a very clear day, you can see Frankfurt. Sir Norman's previous designs include airports at Stansted and Hong Kong, which means this is the third time he's built something planes are going to fly into. Clive, a piece of music for you. Clive, who wants to be alone in league with northerners?
Oh, yes, there's our country being created in Italy. The north bit of Italy wants to break away from the south bit of Italy. But unfortunately, they haven't got something like Scotland or Wales to call themselves, like an ancient... So they've made up a title. It's called...
Whoppier.
That was Alan contributing. Sorry. That. I wouldn't use such a term. I appear on Channel 4. At least I used to. It's something like Padua or North Ligia or something. And the Northern League has decided that they want the whole country, and they're going to be celebrating, and their capital is going to be Venice, and they're going to have a flag and excitement. And it's all a bit of nonsense, really.
If it's Northern League, why don't they call it Huddersfield? Those of us can remember back a few years.
It's Third Division North, it was called in the old days, but now it's the Northern League or the Premiership or something.
The bid for independence is by a political party called the Northern League, whose boss, Umberto Bossi, has called for bonfire street parties in the new capital, Venice. Which is true. The highlight of the celebrations will be a ritual burning of Italian TV licences. It was originally planned to be driver's licences, but they couldn't find any drivers who'd got any. So, 2 points then. Alan, whose sweet nothings were major somethings?
Well, this gave us a lot of problems on Monday at the breakfast table, because Emma Nicholson had described John Major as a political donkey. So he thought about that for a very long time. Especially as she said he'd made a pass at her. And I thought, this is a very strange picture, this room at number 10, where Emma has walked in with the perfume that John said was very nice, and she then said he was a political donkey. Cast a whole new light on things. And then Angela Rumbold came out and said she was menopausal. I mean, not she was, that Emma Nicholson was. possibly even John Major. Really, it's all extremely unsavoury, and there is a rift. Well, the rift has happened. I mean, Emma has now gone to be an SDP or something.
But the chat-up line, as I understand it, was he sat her down on the sofa next to her and said, "That's a nice perfume you're wearing." She said, "Is it?" And then he said, "Do tell me what's it called." And she said, "I don't know." And it's just lucky there are some other people there, because obviously passion would have got the better of him. And he would have thrown himself on her.
Pretty strange thing for Rumble to say, given that Rumble's a bloke. You know Rumble's a bloke?
No. I don't think you have Rumble of the Bay.
No. Just had to look at Rumble to realise he's been to Tangiers. He's completely been rebuilt.
Hang on.
He knows this.
Been to Tangiers. Can you explain that, please, for those of us who've led a sheltered life?
It's where you go for Moroccan surgery.
It's where Alan went, anyway.
I used to be a baritone.
Alana, as you used to be.
I used to be Margaret Beckett. And I could be again if they've kept the bits.
The claim was by Emma Nicholson that she was propositioned by John Major with the line, "What's that beautiful perfume you're wearing?" The Prime Minister, she said, had sidled up to her on a sofa, slid an arm behind her back, skillfully undid a zip, before seductively slipping his hand inside the cushion cover. The scores at the end of round two are Andy and Matthew, 8 points, Alan and Clive, 8 points. We start round three with a cutting from The Independent.
A mother and son who bet £20 at odds of 1,000 to 1 that Elvis Presley would appear at a concert in Memphis last week appear to have lost their money.
Thank you, Linda Blackburn of Essex, for that. Andy, who branched out with one small step for mankind?
I think this is the story that Homo sapiens was Homo erectus from the moment he came down from the trees, because in the past it's been thought that when we first evolved and we decided to come down out of the trees and have a mooch around, that we probably slouched around with our knuckles scraping the ground and with sort of, you know, these protruding foreheads, a bit like a Wimbledon player probably. And but now it appears that we came down and we got the hang of walking straight away.
They also invented the flute. That was the other interesting thing.
Yes. They
came down,
the blues,
stood up straight, and invented the flute. Yeah. Before the fire. And yes. Before the fire or before the wheel, you would think, they'd say, "What's that?" They'd say, "Would it roll downhill?" Said, "Yeah." It's a flute.
Well,
it's very strange. They probably made piles of flutes and then lit them.
A computer simulation at the British Association showed that the first hominid walked with bent legs, dragging his genitals along the ground, but very quickly learned to stand upright. Matthew, a piece of music for you. Matthew, how did Sherry become a prima donna?
Well, this is the story of Sherry Blair's alleged guest editorship of the magazine Prima, which I think is the best-selling women's magazine in the country. And they've had their 10th anniversary issue, the October issue, which is just out. And Sherry, allegedly, I said, because I was looking into this last week and chatting to the editor of Prima. And I then talked to some mutual friend, and she said that the editor's best friend is Alistair Campbell, who was Mr. Blair's press secretary. And I just thought it's one of those strange coincidences. Anyway, the Labour Party got this fantastic publicity, because the battle now is between Norma and Sherry as to which is the most sort of little womanish. We've come so far in the last 25 years that Sherry Blair, who was a QC in her 30s and halfway to being a judge in her early 40s, and what she chooses to talk about in Prima is knitting patterns.
I'm sure you're wrong, Matthew. I think she did edit it, because I read it and there was a big colour pull-out thing in the middle about how to thump your kids.
Yeah, I saw that.
This is Sherry Booth, who edited the latest edition of the women's magazine Prima. And among her domestic revelations was the fact that Tony Blair loves polishing his shoes. He insists on getting the pair so shiny he can see both his faces in them. Such forays into publishing are common for political spouses. Harold Wilson's wife wrote poetry, Hillary Clinton wrote for The New Yorker, and Dennis Thatcher received numerous rejection slips from the Reader's Wives feature in Fiesta magazine. Alan, who's 45 may be number one at 90?
Well, this is a writer I haven't actually read, called Catherine Cookson, who's made hundreds of millions of pounds from writing books. Has now produced an album called Her Way, and it's going to... unless it's that woman who came second to Blur. Because the woman who came second to Blur was about 150 as well, and they gave her a tin whistle or something and said how wonderful she was, and I heard her. She was awful. She looked like Tiny
You're
Tim.
You're a very generous move to
No, I'm not really. But this is Catherine Cookson, yes. Whom I'm a great admirer. I've read every word the woman's written. And
but not as written by her.
She has a lovely, lovely lilt in her voice, and she's done Her Way. Extremely original title. Probably reflects on the sort of writing she does. And it's going to be number one for Christmas. I used to believe, when I went through airports, I mean, I go through airports quite a lot, and being sort of... I used... picking up books, Catherine Cookson were always embossed, and I thought, these are books for the blind. And then you'd open them, and there were smooth pages, and I thought, this is some terrible practical joke on the blind. They're all going off to Torremolinos, and they're going through Gatwick, and they pick up this book, and they think, oh, that'll do, and they get on the flight, they strap themselves in, and there's bugger all on page two.
And at the end of round three, the scores are, both sides, 12 points each. And before we start the final round, here's a story seen in the European magazine, sent in by Mrs. L.S. Rose of Aylesbury.
A man arrested in Stavanger, Norway, spent 2 weeks in a women's cell block before anyone noticed. Police Inspector Leif Topness said, "It seems pretty clear our body search techniques aren't good enough."
Thank you. And here's a piece of music.
Why tell them all your secrets? Who kissed there long ago? Whispering grass, the trees don't need to know.
Andy, who saw long grass as a sign to go up the pole?
This is a story about a man who noticed that a road sign, which was a sort of speed limit sign, was getting obscured because the grass was growing too long on the verge. So he rang the council, said the grass is growing a bit long, can you send a man along? And the man from the council came along, and he did, well, obviously, he welded a 4-foot-long extension onto the pole bearing the sign, so that the sign became about 12 feet high or whatever, and then off he went whistling merrily along his way. And I don't know how long the council are going to let the grass get. It'll probably be bigger than Sir Norman Foster's jobby by the time they've welded all these extensions on. And the local resident was a bit surprised that the council chose to go down that route, and wondered, I think he speculated that perhaps it was not the best use of ratepayers' money.
The council were asked if it wouldn't have been easier to use a lawnmower, but replied that that would be daft, as you can't weld poles with a lawnmower. One of York's council tenants, who rang later to complain about her low ceilings, has been advised to have her head cut off. Clive, which unholy racket shocked the flock?
This must be, yes, I remember now, Radio 1, I think, no, this comes back to me now, I seem to remember reading a story a couple of seconds ago on a notepad that some church trying to protect itself from lightning had a lightning conductor, and unfortunately started picking up Radio 1. So instead of hearing Lord Runce's latest revelations about the royal family or something, which was supposed to be included in the sermon, they got Chris Evans telling unsuitable jokes, or whatever you get on Radio 1 nowadays. And it happened... was it in Huddersfield?
Near
Huddersfield, I think. Part of the Northern League, anyway, up there. And if that isn't worth 2 points, my name's not Alan Corran.
It is the church which started a resound to Radio 1, which woke up the entire parish and doubled the station's listening figures. Radio signals were picked up by the lightning conductor and amplified by a gramophone turntable, which was linked to the public address system, proving that the BBC is still at the cutting edge of technology. So, 2 points to Clive, just. Alan, chance to make an honest man of yourself. Who went Deutsch on a cab fare?
Yes. Normally, when I'm standing outside the BBC and I want to go to Cricklewood, about 4 miles up the road, they say, sorry, no, I can't do that. South of the river, turnaround time and all that stuff. And somehow, these six labourers stopped the cab and said, take us to Dusseldorf. All right, get in. Please sit back in your seat for safety and comfort. Dunker for not smoking. And before they knew it, it was 600 miles or something, or 700 quid. And it was just labourers British labourers acting like Germans. I mean, they wanted to get to work on time in Dusseldorf.
And did the driver know the way? He didn't need any directions? He just sort of...
Well, he got a bit bothered in the middle of the North Sea. So, Christ, it will be lousy weather like this, and I've just... All my plugs are wet. But, I suppose they put it on a ferry. I don't know. I'm not a cab driver. I'm not even German.
Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy?
Well, I'm indebted to Mr. Alan Rudd, who sent in this clipping, and it's an excerpt from a letter from Suntours, the travel firm, to an unhappy customer. It says, the company is sorry that you are unhappy, but points out that you booked a relatively cheap holiday at the end of the season in Turkey. And being attacked in your hotel and forced to hide from a pistol-waving manager is just part and parcel of travelling abroad. Suntours has refused to refund any part of the cost of your holiday. It has offered a 15% discount on another holiday, but you seem less than keen to risk this.
Well, this is actually from Police Magazine, and it's a story of uniformed officers from Albany Street, Nick, which isn't far from here, I guess, who were trying to execute a search warrant but couldn't because there was only one door to the premises, and it was a huge steel door. And then one of them, a PC Dean Cunnington, had a brainwave. He decided to go undercover. He put on a postman's uniform, strode up to the door with colleagues close behind, and knocked hard until a voice shouted, "Who is it?" from within. He shouted, "It's the police."
Clive.
Well, this is from the Cotswold edition of the Gloucestershire Echo, sent in from Paul Webber. The story is, a Japanese holidaymaker was sent to a rabbit breeding farm after asking Tourist Information Centre staff the way to the nearest toilet. Confused staff at the Cirencester Centre couldn't understand the man when he asked where the nearest rabbitory was. So instead of giving him directions to the lavatory, he was given a booklet on Chalderton Rare Breeds Farm Park near Salisbury, nearly 50 miles away.
Alan.
Well, I have a tender little story about contemporary sexual mores, Simon, that could have been written by Catherine Cookson. It actually comes from the Los Angeles Times. It says, Sergeant Fuselli of the LAPD told the court that he'd gone into Straps, a notorious S&M bar, on a routine check for underage drinkers. The defendant had offered his wrist, shouting, "Cuff me! Cuff me!" When the sergeant refused to manacle him, struck him with a bottle.
Thank you all, and now let's look at the final scores, which are Andy and Matthew 16, but Alan and Clive narrow winners on 17 points. And that's all for this week. Until the next time, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Matthew Norman and Clive Anderson. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft and Adam Bostock-Smith. The producer was Aled Evans.